Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there. Good morning, everybody. How are you today? It's a Tuesday. It's Sports Daily. Albrock and Caster here with you. Max Power producing for us as we continue to make our way through the dog days of summer here. The calendar turns to July. We'll start to set our focus on the upcoming NFL season. We'll get training camps this month. We will continue to dive into the Chiefs and the rest of the NFL and what we think, maybe start coming up with some predictive things. We'll have our Chiefs insider, sort of our football insider this summer, Felix Johnson, in later in the show to help us do all that. The Royals, well, they don't get the road trip started well. The long ball bites them as they fall to Seattle in the opener there. And the danger of this series is that's the team that they're trailing in the wild card. So if they don't at least split, they're going to find themselves somewhere between 5.5 and 8.5 games back in the wild card. So we will dig into that, of course, and much, much more here on the program. It's all What's on Tap, and it is brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company. Oh, by the way, at Wichita Brewing Company, they're celebrating the 4th with $4 beers from July 2nd through July 6th. So this starts tomorrow at all three brew pubs. A great idea if you've got people out of town, if you're looking for a place to go, you're tired of cooking. Wichita Brewing Company, $4 beers, July 2nd through the 6th, inside the three brew pubs. That's What's on Tap. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Happy Tuesday. I got to take advantage of the $4 beers. That sounds pretty incredible for the
fourth. I do love their beer.
Man.
I do love their beer. Wooshock Wheat is, and I don't normally drink a lot of wheat beer, like hardly ever, unless I'm at Wichita Brewing Company. I really like their Wooshock Wheat. I like a lot of them. My wife's V6 drinker, their IPA.
Your wife, does, she is an IPA fan, which I'm not. I've never been an IPA guy.
Yeah.
I can't.
I don't.
It's like
I don't like them much.
Too hoppy. Too hoppy for me. I can't do it.
Yeah, too hoppy. The reason I don't like IPAs is because I try to drink IPAs like I'm drinking a light beer, and it's just going to be a major headache for me. That's the main reason. But yeah, it's a little hoppier. I like it just a good drinking beer, if that makes any sense. Like just a beer you can make it through with no effort and you just move on. So the good thing about Wichita Brewing Company is they have lots to choose from, lots and lots to choose from. And you can find them at a lot of different restaurants, not just their place across town. Tommy, that was a pretty rough way to start the Royals series. Just, you know, a couple of bad pitches here and there, but no surprise, the offense can't do anything, so it doesn't really matter. It just cannot score runs. George Kirby's a good pitcher, but he's been gettable this year while he comes back from injury. Just not a lot of, just, you know, if you're the opposition right now pitching to the Royals, you're just not scared of anything.
I mean, you're right. I mean, honestly, they could go up there and, you know, have, I don't know, little meatballs thrown to them the entire game and probably not score more than a couple of runs. It's an anemic offense. It has been an anemic offense. That hasn't changed. The difference between now and the beginning of the year, which we've talked about at length, is the fact that the Royals pitching is not as dominant as it was.
It's not, you know, the best in baseball
right. It can't compensate for the lack of offense. And, you know, when you're taking on Cal Raleigh and what he does, and I mean, he had another home run last night. I just saw a graphic on TV that showed that he's behind only Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire for most home runs before the All-Star break, which is wild to me. And, you know, you go back to the epic season that Bonds had when he hit 70, and then the 1998 home run chase with McGwire and Sosa, and Griffey was in the mix, you know, for that too. You know, so like, he's doing historic things, and the Royals ran up against him last night and he hit another home run. It's just,
and by the way, he's a catcher.
He's a catcher. And it just so happens that the Royals don't have any way to counteract what the Mariners were doing offensively. It's like a boxing match, and they got KO'd pretty early, and they just don't have the arsenal to be able to back it up.
The Mariners are one of my favorite, like, you know, not, I don't want to call him a dark horse necessarily, but like one of my favorite under the radar World Series picks. if they can get and stay healthy in their rotation with Raleigh or Rosarena, who are the two damage doers last night, and Julio Rodriguez, who's one of the better young players in baseball, like they really do have a shot. They've got some really good pitching. Their rotation is solid. And the Royals are about to find that out. And this was the danger of this series. The Royals, you feel like they're almost half the going to pitch their way through it and win a couple, you know, nail biters. I think, you know, if you're looking for non-doomsday, it's going to have to be at least a series split. I think they can work with that. I think they can, you know, if they can keep it to that, then they'll be okay to sort of at least in the back of your head have an optimistic take. But boy, if they do more than that, it's going to be tough. We'll get into all of that as we make our way through. The other big thing happening yesterday, and honestly, it's pretty hard to keep up with, is the NBA free agency season gets underway. I've always thought the NBA free agency season is probably the most difficult to try and track. The NFL's is also crazy, but man, the NBA's moves so dang fast. Just move after move after move after move made across the league. It's such a flurry, and you're like, okay, well, let me just keep up with the headline moves. It's hard. It's hard to do it. There's a lot of teams that made crazy, impactful, you know, groups of moves that are going to make a big difference for them next year, I think. And you know, we will probably just watch Giannis and LeBron and wonder what they'll do. And that's okay. Like, I mean, I feel like that's kind of where we are with the league. But man, there's a ton of activity across the NBA with deals and trades. And it's tough to keep up with. These NBA GMs, like, it's the least fan-friendly, I think, contractual and, like, the transactional nature of the league is the hardest to follow as a fan.
Well, and, you know, it's not like there have been major, major, major marquee moves outside of Kevin Durant. That's about the only one this offseason that was kind of a needle mover, I think, as far as what's been going on transactionally in the NBA over the last couple of weeks. And of course that happened during the NBA finals. So it's not like it's happening now when there's not basketball going on. Really outside of that, it's kind of just like you mentioned, watching what Giannis is going to do and watching what LeBron is going to do. And can the Lakers pick up some reinforcements? And, you know, are the Rockets a legitimate contender now? You know,
like to my very untrained NBA eyes these days, the Rockets had the best day yesterday to me.
The Rockets, I think, so far have had the best offseason. I mean, you know, honestly, being able to bring in Durant. And then even more than that, you know, Fred VanVleet obviously signing a brand new deal and freeing up money for the team to go and get reinforcements. I mean, it was VanVleet really in his contract restructuring that allowed the Rockets to have the kind of day that they had yesterday in free agency.
And does that surprise you at
not
all?
Not at all. I mean, Fred would do that. He's got his bag, you know, but he declined the player option. And at that point, they signed him to a deal, and that freed up money to go get free agents and build that team. And I like the Rockets' approach. I'm not a big Durant guy, but I understand why they brought him in, and I understand the fact that
great fit.
I understand. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. And they also were able to get reinforcements in free agency yesterday. So
it's easy for me to just root for Fred. Like, honestly, like I can root for the Rockets because I'll root for Fred. We'll get into them because I'm with you. I thought they had the best day. We'll take a stab at it, and then we'll look at some of the more headline-y things with the star players. But we'll do all that as we make our way through. Your calls, comments, thanks for watching on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube X, and of course, listening on KFH. It's all Brockton Castor on a Tuesday. We'll be right back.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody, to Sports Daily. Glad to be here with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every day here, not just at KFH, but all across the Odyssey Studios. Appreciate their support of the program. Tommy, did you make it up late with the Royals? I made it to about eight innings, and I was like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah, I got shorter than that. I think I was five innings or six innings. And, you know, they're down 5-1. I'm like, I mean, what are the odds they are able to score runs to get back in this game? I think I'm going to go to bed.
It's just frustrating to see this rough stretch. I don't know if it's helpful at all to them because it's going to help them define what the rest of their season is, but they're going to get hot at some point before this season's over. And it will, because that's just the way this season has gone.
All right.
And we'll be like, they're probably going to fall too far out of it, no matter when it happens. It's just like, if it happens sooner than later, is it just fool's gold? Like, if it happens and they can get with 3.5 or 2.5, like, is it even realistic? So then I keep looking at all these trade lists, and I'm not the only one that has a hard time with it. Not very many places are really listing their players. You had that one story where Lugo was mentioned, and then you've had the Duran rumors, but otherwise they're not really ever listed as true sellers. And I think that just sort of defines this season, because the reality is, like, if they were true sellers at the deadline, it would be more than just Lugo that they would be moving. They would move bullpen pieces at that point, I would think. They would shop a lot of guys around. And that we may get to that point. Like, this series is going to, like, if they don't do something in this series, and it's either going to be 5.5 or 8.5 back, like that at that point. Because remember, Seattle's the last team in the wild card right now. That means the other teams are further ahead than that. That means Toronto and Tampa are even further ahead than Seattle. So, I mean, it honestly, and I don't want to be too hyperbolic here, but this is probably the biggest urgency spot of the season for the Royals, this early week series right here.
Well, and I think that's what made the game last night that much more frustrating, probably even more so, in my opinion, than the homestand, or the last two homestands for that matter, for the Royals, because they're in a situation now where they're playing a team that has one of the wild card spots. You can gain a significant amount of ground in this four-game stretch, and I know it's on the road, and I know that the Mariners have a really good lineup and studs that can hit the ball over the fence and all of that. But this was a spot last night for the Royals, coming off of a 1-5 homestand. You needed to reset, you needed to regroup, and you needed to go and get the opening game in this series. And at least at that point, then you feel like there's maybe some hope. You feel like at that point, okay, like, they got the first game on the road against the Mariners, against the team they're chasing in the wild card, and then they fell flat like we've seen so many times. Here's the thing, and the reason I laughed a moment ago when you said the Royals are going to get hot at some point is that I think that's just wishful thinking. I think that's just grasping at straws. Like, we're not going to see another 16-4 stretch from them saw back in, when was that, the month of May? Like, we're not going to see that again from the Royals.
We're not going to see that, but they're also not going to all of a sudden finish 40 games under 500.
No, I'm not suggesting that, but, like, would they play 500 ball the rest of the way? Maybe, but I mean, I don't even know if I'm
good enough, obviously.
Right. And I don't know if I'm even willing to bank on that. Like, the way that this team has played, the overall body of work for the last month and a half, really, has been a mediocre at best baseball team. That's just who they are at this point. Like, and it doesn't mean that they can't rattle off some wins. Of course, like, remember, they went on the road to the Rangers and swept them and looked really good when they did that. They went on the road to San Diego and looked pretty good in the opening game before they lost the final two in that series on the road. But they looked competitive against one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. There were times against the Dodgers that they looked competitive. They looked like they could hang with a team like the Dodgers. But then for as many games like that, there have been just absolute eggs that they've laid, just absolute duds. The series against the Yankees, the series against Tampa Bay, you know, like all of it just shows, like, to me, they are right now that they are who they are, and they're a mediocre ball club right this second.
Well, let's hope they're mediocre, I guess, is the point for me, because if they're mediocre, that's why I say, like, at some point they're going to, because the law of averages says they'll heat up and win some games. But man, if you take away, it was 6 out of 7, and then it was 9 out of 10, and then it was 9 out of 11, then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wins. So it was 16-2. If you take the 16-2 out of their record right now, and just, I'm not saying they wouldn't have won any of them, but let's just, you know, take that very small part of the season out, and they're 14 games worse, and they're 7 games, like, you'd be sitting here looking at, like, one of the worst teams in baseball, and I don't think they are that, right? I don't think that's what they are. Their roster is much better than that. And so I think the problem, and why it looks more and more like sell, 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 is because even if they have a stretch where they're pretty good, it doesn't look like it's going to be enough over time. Now, they can finish this series out. They can win the next 3 games, and this all changes. We're still in that part of the season, right, where it's like, okay, it looks like they're bad. But we can't ignore the overall body of work, which is they've had an 18-game stretch, essentially 3 weeks, where they were outstanding. And for pretty much the rest of the season, they haven't been very good. Like, it's been that, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And I think that also, like, you look at do they pass the eye test? And the answer is no. Like, are they a playoff team? Do they look like a playoff team? Outside of that 3-week stretch, no. Like, they honestly don't. They didn't start the season looking like a playoff team. I think that it was a little bit of fool's gold, and I'll admit I bought into it too at the time. Like, I'm like, man, they're 16-4 in 20 games. Like, this team looks incredible. And yeah, they're not scoring a bunch of runs, but the pitching is elite and it's wonderful. And eventually the offense is going to catch up with what the pitching is doing. And that didn't happen. And they went completely the opposite direction. And I'll admit I was fooled by them at the time. I thought that they were a legitimate playoff contender like they were a year ago. And it sucks because I thought that they were for real. I thought that they were legitimate. They don't pass the eye test anymore. And they haven't for a while. I think that's the thing, is that, a month ago, 2 weeks ago, maybe even a week ago, before that homestand against the Rays and the Dodgers, you're like, yeah, like, they haven't played very well. Like, I was kind of thinking, like, they haven't played very well. They're hovering around 500. Let them get hot a little bit, and they'll be right back in the mix. I'm kind of off that train at this point. Like, they do not look like they are worthy or capable of a playoff spot. They're not a playoff baseball team.
Right, and I totally agree with that. There's just so much baseball to play in the pitching, unless they trade it all away. And I think this is why this conversation stays so interesting. They have, right now, allowed the 4th fewest runs in baseball. That's how good their pitching has been. It's been very, 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 very good. They have scored the fewest runs in baseball now. Like, that's what the month of June did, right? They were kind of hovering and floating with some of those bad teams. Now they're the worst. They're basically the worst offense in baseball. And so they won't stay one of the best pitching staffs in baseball if they trade these pieces away. That puts the dagger in it for sure.
I don't even think if they keep all their pitching that they're going to be one of the best pitching staffs in baseball. They'll be good.
Well, I think they'll remain top 10, probably.
But they're not going to be elite. Like, that, you know, and so I think that we'll look back and at the end of the season and be like, all right, that was a good pitching staff, but not good enough to compensate for the lack of offense.
And there has never been, well, right, if you're just comparing it to the rest of the league, it's probably going to be top 10. But honestly, like, that is probably the thing that would add to the urgency to make some trades. Like, I still cannot, as much as we both and you more than me thought they needed to add another bat in the offseason, I cannot believe how non-productive this offense has been when you look at the names in the lineup, it blows my mind that they've been as bad offensively as they have been. I cannot believe it. So I don't know that that's changing, even if they made a trade to try and make it better for this year, right? For this year, I don't think that's going to change. The pitching, I agree, and I've said it forever. You know, being the fourth best staff in baseball is probably not sustainable. It's going to take at least that, it feels like, if they're going to remain in this thing at all over the next month. So the urgency then becomes strike while the iron's hot with these pitchers and trade them away. I mean, that's what, to me, that's what is that, like, that's the story that's unfolding, is that regardless if the Royals can sort of win half their games this month, they're going to almost certainly become sellers, because you have to imagine, like, what does this look like? And again, they're always going to be like tentative sellers, because a lot of the players they have are under contract, right? There's a handful that they could potentially trade away to bring in Halls, but you got to be careful. You have to be careful because the Royals don't have some long sustained success here. They have last year. That's the only one in about the last decade that has been worth anything. And while I do think the light at the end of the tunnel is much, much brighter after last year than it was 2-3 years ago, you got to be careful with the fans, because if you give them 1 out of 10 years and then you're going to try another small rebuild, that's a tough sell. So they got to be really careful how they do it and who they do it.
Well,
with,
because I don't think they have some fundamental pieces that I don't think you need to do, tear it down to the studs and rebuild type rebuild. Like, can you get better around the margins? Sure. Can you move out players that, you know, are not going to be around long term, or that, you know, you can get a return for that will help you 2 years down the line, 4 years down the line, et cetera, et cetera. Sure, you can, without totally blowing the whole thing up, right? Like, they've got Bobby Witt Jr., and he's absolutely a foundational piece. They signed him to a long-term deal for that reason. Jack Caglione is probably a foundational piece long-term for this team. Vinny Pasquantino has shown that he's probably a long-term foundational piece for this team. Salvador Perez is not going to play forever, and we've seen, you know, the diminishing returns from him over the last couple of years. He's getting older. He's not producing the way that he had. You need to probably start looking at a succession plan for him. From there, yeah, like, I think, and of course, Michael Garcia has been fantastic, but from there, then you look at, all right, like, there are a lot of other holes out in the field that you need to fill. Like, it's a hodgepodge of guys that Matt Quatrero has trotted out there in the outfield and in the bottom half of the lineup. It really is. Like, you've got names, like, of course, it started with MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe. You've got Mark Canna. You've got Drew Waters, who I thought was going to latch on, and he has lost a bunch of at-bats recently, which is weird to me. You've got Kyle Isbell, who's been fairly consistent, but he's not going to be a major needle mover for you. Michael Massey's hurt, but he's been terrible. And then from there, like, other guys like John Rave and Tyler Tolbert and other players that are playing in the outfield that you're kind of like, man, like, they're just kind of throwing bodies out there, like, warm bodies to play out in the outfield and in the bottom half of that lineup. Like, you've got to get that shored up. I think the front office can do that without blowing up the entire thing. I think you can address the needs that you have without, like, this major rebuild.
I think so, too. And for me, it's more about the bullpen, you know, are you, cause the bullpen is usually the most tradable, but you're going to need a good bullpen next year too. And so, you know, how much of that are you willing to move on from? The best news for the Royals in the short term is their most desirable and tradable asset is something everybody wants. And from a perception standpoint, it doesn't put the nail in your coffin. And that would be to trade Seth Lugo, because that is where you have the most depth. And I think, you know, if you're the Royals, you can sort of start there. I still think they ought to be in the business of, not with the sense, and they could frame it this way, but the reality would be not that they think they could go get a bat that puts them over the edge this year, but that they can go get a bat that helps them next year. Because the great danger to me for the Royals isn't that this season gets away. It's that next season gets away. It's that the season after that gets away. So look, if for whatever reason, this one is not going to go the way that you want it to go, then you cannot let that snowball into next year. So if there's a bat that you can go get that you think that helps you, and it seems like, well, why are they going to be aggressive to trade for a bat? I think you got to still look at that. Back to the point we talked about more last week before the week got away from them. Like, can they be buyers and sellers? I still think there's some, but obviously not for rentals, but they should be in the business of finding a bat because they couldn't do it in free agency. You can control a trade just a little bit more than you can control free agency. So if you can go find somebody, go find somebody. And if you don't think Noah Cameron is going to be, you know, Tom Glavine, go trade Noah Cameron. Go get yourself a bat, right? Daniel Lynch is sitting there. Can Daniel Lynch do the same thing Chris Bubich has done? I don't know. But you have to, they have to look at it. Sort. I think they have to be aggressive at the deadline in that way too. Like, can we go acquire somebody that helps us long term? Like, not only who can we afford to trade away, but who's going to be out there where we don't have to go try to outbid the Mets for a bat? Like, who's out there that we could go trade and control for a few years, like we did with Lucas Ursig, that kind of a trade, right? Like, who could we go find right now that can help us next year and maybe help you this year a little bit? I don't know.
But the key there from what you just said, I don't disagree with you, but the key there is control for a few years. Like, you've got to make sure if you're going right. to, if you're going to trade away a guy like Noah Cameron, who's been stellar, he's been the main bright spot, I would say, overall, and biggest revelation for this team so far in 2025. If you're going to move a piece like that, that could potentially be a cornerstone pitcher for your rotation long term, you got to make sure if you're going to go get another bat, that bat is, you're going to have control for, I don't know, at least 2 years, if not longer, three, maybe 4 years. If you can, the last thing the Royals want to do is trade away a piece like Noah Cameron for somebody that is just going to leave you in free agency at the end of this year, or even the end of next year. Like, I even think that, like, even a guy having a year remaining on his contract after this season is not enough to be able to trade a piece like Noah Cameron. I'm of the camp that I think they should keep Cameron because if you're going to end up moving Lugo, and I would imagine that probably more than likely he will by the trade deadline be on another team. I don't know what team, but I would imagine that'll probably happen, in my opinion. If you're going to move him and you're unsure about the recovery of Alec Marsh, you're unsure about the recovery of Kyle Wright, you're unsure about the development of Daniel Lynch as a full-blown starter, you're going to need Noah Cameron in that rotation long-term. Next year, the year after that, the year after that. So I'm a little bit hesitant to trade Noah Cameron, but if they're going to move him and if they're going to entertain offers for him, you have to, number one, it's got to be a big league ready bat. And number two, it's got to be a guy that you've got control over for a few years.
Sure. I totally agree. I would caution you though, that if they don't include somebody like him in a trade, you got to be ready for more of the Mark Cannas of the world, of the Hunter Renfroe type additions of the world. Hey, the summer concert series is back at the Capitol Federal Amphitheater in Andover. The series returns Friday, July 11th with Jet City live on stage. Gates open at 6:30. Show starts at 8. Enjoy free live music, food trucks, Friday night fun all summer long. You can find the full schedule at kfhradio.com for the summer concert series. You want to win some HTO? Let's do that right now. Just text the keyword T to the short code 20357, HTO at Wichita East, Wichita West, and in Derby. More than 25 flavors of delicious sweet and unsweet iced tea. You can win a free cup on us right now. Just text the keyword T to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Tommy, we come back in trying to keep up with the frenzy of the NBA free agency. You and I mentioned this off the top briefly, but we both kind of like what the Rockets are cooking here. Fred VanVleet, you could kind of see this coming a little bit when he signed his deal and sort of gave a little money back. It felt like they go and they get Durant. Now they brought in Clint Capella. They brought in Dorian Finney-Smith. Like, they are adding to the team that last year was really good, but really inexperienced, maybe not very deep. They're adding that depth. They add Kevin Durant. I think right now, if you took what's being reported as the moves they're going to make, what they've done, I think that's a team that absolutely could compete with Oklahoma City in the West.
Yeah, I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again. I'm not the biggest Kevin Durant fan, but this move makes a tremendous amount of sense for him to go to the Rockets because of the fact that he does better when he's got a stacked team around him. I mean, a lot of players do, but that's kind of what he does. He becomes kind of that hired gun to come in with a team that, you know, has a lot of talent around him. And then he's that final piece to kind of get them over the hump. He did that at Golden State, and it worked out really well. Didn't really work out with Brooklyn. Didn't really work out with Phoenix. But we've seen a couple of different times, at least, where that has worked out. And I think this is a much better situation for him than what he had in Phoenix, for sure. Having Fred VanVleet around him and then, you know, being able to, you know, the flexibility to go out and sign guys, you know, like Jabari Smith, and then they went and signed Dorian Finney-Smith, and they've got other players now around to help build that team and the supporting cast. I do think that they are a threat to the Thunder in the West. I do think that they have got the pieces together now to at least be a contender. I still like Oklahoma City overall in the West, but I certainly think the Rockets have had the best offseason so far.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they become not just in the West, but even in the East, I think right now, to me, would be the number two sort of team.
Like in the NBA entirely?
In the NBA entirely. I'm not sure who you'd put ahead of them, right? Like, who would you put ahead of them? Let's just look at the odds.
I mean, I would
right
put
now.
I'd put a healthy Boston over them, but, you know, they're not
well,
healthy.
Well, but Boston's right? Not going to be healthy. Yeah. Right. Okay. So right now, yeah, they're tied with Denver right now. Denver's 8-1. The Rockets are 8-1, and the Thunder are the favorite at about 2.5-1. That's according to ESPN bets. So they're right there, and I think that's fine. And the other teams in the mix are Cleveland and the Knicks. That makes sense. You know who the next team would be? You wouldn't get this if I gave you 20 guesses.
The Magic.
You cheater.
I didn't even look. But the Magic, they've been very active. Like
you cheater.
No, like I swear I didn't look it up. You can look at my phone. I don't even have it pulled up. The Magic, they made a trade a couple of weeks ago last week, whenever it was, that was pretty impactful. Like I can believe that.
Who's on that
sure.
team besides Paolo Banchero?
They like Banchero. They think he's going to be
a superstar.
I love
Banchero, but who else is even on that team? That's crazy that they're ahead of Minnesota and the Clippers right now, even the Lakers for that reason. You know, for that matter,
Mac McClung is on that team.
Who?
Mac McClung. Remember old Mac from Texas Tech? He's on that team.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. Paolo and Mac McClung. Yeah. That makes
Desmond Bain is on the team. That was the big. That was the big trade.
Oh, yeah, Bain's good.
They traded for Bain. That was the big one.
Yeah, he's good. I think he's on my fantasy basketball team. Anyway, I think the Rockets are right there, and as the Nuggets trade away Michael Porter Jr., it looks like.
Yeah,
I put the Rockets ahead of Denver. It has been a flurry, and so as we look at it, and this is really like you can go back to all the conversations over the last month we had about the Oklahoma City Thunder. Like they don't really have to do anything; they can just keep using all their draft picks, try to build depth that way. They've got all these guys kind of locked up for a little bit. Like they're at a big advantage here and they can, you know, just try to ride it out. But I do think Houston's in a position. Look, they got to stay healthy and they're relying on an older Durant. I get all that. And an older VanVleet. I think for Durant, it's a good spot because Fred VanVleet isn't afraid of anything, including Kevin Durant being in the locker room. I think for Durant to get somewhere where that dynamic exists is a good thing. All these young players, like whose toes is he going to step on in Houston? I don't think there's a set of toes there that he's going to step on. Their young players are, you know, they're still in a position where they got to develop, right? I don't think Amen Thompson is as bright as his future looks is commanding shot volume. That was by some accounts. And I was listening to some of this yesterday on the JR Sport Brief right here on KFH. Like the difference in the inefficiency of Jalen Green, the player they traded away to upgrade to Kevin Durant, one of the most efficient players in the history of the league, is such a clear upgrade for what they need that it could make a huge difference for them. Like that was the thing apparently for them that they really struggled with last year was that inconsistency and that inefficiency. Well, Durant's not inconsistent. He is one of the most. It's like watching Dirk Nowitzki again. Like, you know exactly what you're going to get from him every single time he's on the floor healthy. He's going to get his and give you a ton of scoring, and that's kind of what they need. And they've got these other pieces. So they're a really interesting team. I think that's fun, and I'm glad they've been aggressive like this because it's fun to root for Fred.
And everybody's going to pay attention to the Durant move for good reason, for sure. But I think really what has made the Rockets now a contender, just in general, is the fact that they've done a bunch of other moves too. And they've had that flexibility financially to go and make impactful moves outside of Kevin Durant. I mentioned Jabari Smith. They signed him for $122 million over 5 years. Last night, they signed Dorian Finney-Smith from the Lakers, $53 million over 4 years. And then around the margins, they've got Steven Adams now. They signed him. Jeff Green, Aaron Holiday, Deshaun Tate. They signed those guys as well. So this is going to be a new-look Rockets team, but the consistency is important too. They signed Ime Udoka as their head coach to a contract extension. They've done a lot to solidify themselves as potentially contenders for a long time to come. You know, that Jabari Smith deal is for 5 years. Steven Adams for 3 years. Dorian Smith-Finney for 4 years. Like, they've got a foundation on that team for a long time to come. So I don't think, you know, even if they don't win an NBA championship this season, I think they're setting the groundwork to potentially be a contender for a long time to come.
Yeah, they've done both. I would agree with that. They, you know, they're going to age out Fred and Kevin Durant at some point. But yeah, they've got some pieces.
Well, Durant before Van Vliet. And Van Vliet's contract is only a 2-year deal. So who knows what he'll do after that.
Right. Yeah. So they've got some time up against them on that. But yeah, I agree with that. They've done a nice job to build for the future and to contend for at least the next couple of years for a title. So they've been really interesting. Of course, the other interesting storylines, we talked about LeBron James yesterday. His situation is very confusing and complicated because he did take his player option, like, to stay. But he's saying, like, am I not stay? So is he going to force a trade? Are we going to go down that road? Who knows? Giannis Antetokounmpo is the other really interesting one because he is, you know, I don't know the exact words his camp has used, but he's open to it. Basically, he's open to moving. If you're the Bucks right now, it's not quite the same as Luka Doncic because Giannis is just a little bit older. But what do you do with that situation? Because with the big time injury that they've had to now sustain and deal with, like, they're not gonna win anything this year. Do you think they could really surround Giannis with another team? I mean, they made their big move for Dame. He got hurt. I just don't know. Like, I think it's different than Luka because trading away a franchise altering piece like that seems crazy, but it also kind of seems crazy imagining them being able to rebuild another championship team before Giannis could walk away for free. I kind of think if I'm the Bucks, I really would think about it. It would be a devastating trade to make, though. That would be so hard.
I mean, the only way that trade is going to happen is if Giannis is disgruntled enough that he demands it, and it gets to a point to where they can't resolve it. They can't come to a resolution. And I think part of the reason why I'm not a big NBA guy is because the players have all of this power to be, like, disgruntled and unhappy, and then teams will bow down to them and do whatever they want to do. You don't see that as much in the other sports, for sure, like you see in the NBA. I don't think
I think that you see it with quarterbacks in the NFL.
You see it with quarterbacks, but you don't see it throughout the entire team.
We're about, like, to see it with TJ Watt.
Well, I think, right. I mean, think about the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill. Like, Tyreek Hill wanted a lot of money, and they're like, we're not going to do that.
The reason, I think, is there are very few players. There are far fewer amount of players that singularly can have the same kind of impact as a really good NBA player. You only start five guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Or, like, I mean, think about Major League Baseball. How many times does a player demand a trade in Major League Baseball and the team is like, okay, we'll do whatever you want to do? Like, that doesn't happen. Like, it doesn't happen.
No, they're like, go fly a kite.
Right, exactly.
Replacement value in baseball is never that bad.
But I don't think we're going to get to that point with Giannis. And the reason why I don't think that is because the East is wide open. With the injuries that we've seen in those other teams, And you know, the really impactful ones like Jason Tatum and Dame Lillard and Tyrese Halliburton and all of that. The East is wide open right now, and Giannis is the biggest superstar in that Eastern Conference right now. And so I think the Bucks will continue to try to be as aggressive as they can. They haven't had a good start to free agency, but I think that there's enough time left, and whether it's through a trade or otherwise, I think they can get better enough to where that should be able to convince Giannis that, okay, we've got a good chance here in the East because the landscape is pretty open for us to be competitive.
Well, and you have to have the conversation too, like Giannis, like it might be a rough year. Give us the year. We can get Dame back. Maybe it ends up getting us a good draft pick. Let us have some time to work. I agree. It's all in Giannis's court. But what becomes really interesting is if he's quote unquote open to it and they begin to be blown away with offers, you probably have to realistically listen a little bit if you're a team like the Bucks. Remember, some of these franchises in the NBA don't have the luxury of having free agents come to them. They're at a severe disadvantage. And so you have to do it like they did it with Giannis, or the Pacers just did it, or the Thunder just did it. You have to draft really well because you're not getting free agents.
You're right.
You know, like it just doesn't happen. So they're in a pretty interesting situation. That's all there. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk to Felix Johnson. We'll talk a little football. We'll get back to the Royals a little bit. Look at the rest of this series, the matchups. It's all coming for you. It's Tuesday on Sports Daily. Don't go away.